check it out now. No doubt now.
Thursday morning, January 13th, 2022. It is the Beating the Book podcast. We just finished doing a megapod for Wildcard Weekend in the NFL. And Drew Dinsick, who was kind enough to do that show with us, is also here to do our first ever Beating the Book tennis exclusive podcast. Got a lot of requests to do this last year when we were doing really well betting tennis all year long, and specifically in the hard court season, really crushed it. So my dream here, and by the way, thank you, Drew, for being here once again. Thank you, sir. Thank you. My dream was to have it be me, you, and Dan Weston from Tennis Ratings. Dano is going to be on a numbers game with me tomorrow, so I'm going to do this part with you first, then we'll throw on Dano tomorrow with me on a numbers game, and that will be the tennis podcast. What do you think my goal should be in terms of listenership versus a football podcast? 20%? Ooh. 25%? Would that be like 20? Heaven?
Honestly, 20%, that is an enormous win. But I will say, yeah, you have an especially dedicated audience, so I believe in them.
Thank you.
I know they care. I know they care about tennis in their hearts, even if they're, ultimately football guys. They care about this stuff. So
yes.
No one would question you were on the nails with a lot of your looks last year in the hard court season. 2021 overall was one of my most successful. Clearly from a bottom line dollars won standpoint, that was my most successful tennis year of all time. And a lot of it was because of the slams. So very excited for 2022 now, and grateful for half as much success,
Me too. Half as much would be phenomenal.
Yeah.
So it is the Australian Open. The Australian Open begins stateside Sunday night, right after, or I guess during the last NFL game. It probably starts right around then on Sunday. So most people will obviously be paying attention to football. We will be paying attention to both. First question, do you do any betting the week before the Australian Open in Adelaide or Sydney, or do you stay away?
I've been playing the match by match pretty regularly, starting with the ATP Cup.
Yeah.
I think you almost have to, otherwise there's such a decent gap, and you can't really evaluate player form unless you have skin in the game.
Completely
in the
agree.
Early tournaments, in my opinion.
Completely
so.
Agree. Yeah.
Yeah. ATP Cup, I think, told us a lot about some of the contenders on the men's side. And similarly, the Adelaide tournament in particular on the women's side was pretty illustrative of some of the top player form.
Adelaide, as they say. Well, speaking
Adelaide.
Of Adelaide with Ash Barty winning it. Because I know you skew more ATP. So let's just say briefly about the women's side, which I'll talk to Dan more about. But that tournament in Adelaide, Ash Barty is so far ahead of the field at this point that would you consider a futures bet at her at, like, how short of a price would you even go right now on Ash Barty to win
the
Australian Open?
She did not get an especially favorable draw. I think that's important to recognize. And in general, my rule of thumb about getting involved in the futures market, particularly once you know the draw, if your player has to do it themselves, if they're going to have to beat all the other competition to get the title themselves, you're almost better off going match by match than you are getting involved with a shorter priced future. And I think that qualifies for Ash Barty this year. I think she's the rightful favorite.
If the draw doesn't give her any gimmies and she's got to win all seven of them on her own.
Yes. Last year, Ash Barty got an absolute dream draw. And she was the short favorite as well. And in that sense, you were better off taking the futures price for her because all of the talented players in the Australian Open were on the bottom half. And there was going to be chaos was going to ensue. You didn't know who was going to come out of that bottom. And ultimately, Ash, she went out in inglorious fashion before she even got to the final. That was one of those where you were never going to get as good of a price by going match by match with her as you would have just taking the futures. And I think this year is opposite. She has drawn Osaka potentially in round four. If Osaka has anywhere close to the form we've seen from her, in Australian Open's past, that match could be pretty close to a pick'em by market. Osaka is not a guarantee to get there, by the way. She's got to go through potentially Anisimova and or Bencic. My guess would be Anisimova.
Anisimova just coming off a tournament win as well in Australia.
Yeah, she looks good. Yeah. She looks good. And I know a lot of people that locked in some 100-to-1s on her, and they were devastated by this draw because it's bad. Because yeah. It is bad. Yes. It is bad. Bencic isn't like in super great form. She almost lost to Dodin. I don't know if you saw that the other day.
That was a
rough outing. She ultimately wins, but then turns around and bows out. She's still a dangerous player. Anisimova Bencic is going to be one of the better second round matches in the entire women's field. And then winner takes on Osaka, and then winner takes on Barty. So Barty just even getting out of her section is going to be a tough ask. If she does get out of her section, her potential quarterfinal opponents, Sakkari and Jabeur, they can both absolutely hold their own on this fast court. So that's going to be a tough match.
Jabeur is phenomenally dangerous at this point, I think.
Although she did with, did you see why she withdrew today?
I saw that she retired. The thing about
that was an eye raise.
Yeah, the thing about these tournaments before these slams, though, as you very well know, I'm just sort of saying it out loud. You do wonder in so many of these, and that's what makes them not really frustrating to bet, because you know what you're getting into is, you know, I had Madison Brangle as a short dog yesterday, and she broke, I can't even remember who she was playing. Was it Kanya? I can't even remember. But she broke whoever she was playing, and then she got broke back, and at 3-3, little injury, and that was the end of that. Yep. And I just think that the first sign of anything before a slam, they're like, deuces, I'm out.
Ripcord.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely true. But yeah, back to the Barty point. You're probably talking about Osaka in round four, Sakkari in the quarterfinals, Krejcikova or Badosa in the semifinals, and then somebody tough in the finals. Whoever comes out of that bottom half. Let's say it's Iga.
Iga.
That four. If you just moneyline roll Barty over those four matches,
100%.
You're gonna do better than 3-1.
Yes.
You're probably looking, even if she is nuclear hot and like carries her form from Adelaide straight through, hitting 17 aces a match, winning every service point, blah blah blah. You're still gonna do better than 3-1 is my gut. And so I think that's the way I would attack the women's side at this point.
That's a great point. Yeah.
She may pick up an injury. You may see something you don't like, and you can, then you're not stuck with that future trying to figure out what to do with it too. So
that is a lot more
flexibility.
When you lay it out just as you did, I mean, that is a murderer's row down the stretch of that tournament, because you're right. The Badosa Krejcikova one, again, for those who are not familiar with tennis, Badosa was the player I won the most money on calendar year 2021. She is a player who has found her form, Spanish player. Krejcikova, who won the French, was that last? I can't even remember with pandemic years now who won when what. She won the French. Krejcikova is also a very good hard court player. She's not just a clay court specialist. And then there's Iga, and you and I talked about this a little bit on a numbers game this past week, which is if you forced me to make a futures bet on the women's side at the price you can get Iga at, I would probably take Iga. The only thing with Iga is this, who obviously won at Adelaide last year on hard court and obviously famously won the French Open the year before that, for some of us more famously than others. I think that she's she's a really good hard court player, but I do wonder if there's like this thing where she can't get over the Barty hump.
Yeah.
But she's
yeah.
still the best bet to me long shot wise.
And if you got involved before the draw, she was the biggest winner of the draw,
yes.
in my opinion.
Yeah.
She basically has the highest quality, highest ELO, highest upside of anyone on the bottom half, in my opinion. People will point to Sabalenka. People will point to Kontaveit. People will may make a case for Muguruza. But ultimately, there's no one that is... There's either... it's in my opinion, at least, either Iga comes out of the bottom, or it's some dark horse.
Should be fun. And that wasn't even the side of the Australian Open you wanted to talk about. Let's go to the men. Let's go to the men's side. The men's side, obviously, for those who have been following every sport on earth and have missed the Novak Djokovic news, I don't know what to tell you. This is the biggest global story there's been. But Novak Djokovic
Crazy.
Is the world number
push
one.
Push alerts for this.
Yeah, we should get push. But we're doing this Thursday morning, and we still don't know the fate of what's happening with Novak Djokovic. Novak Djokovic, for those who don't know, is an anti-vax guy. Not a fan of the vaccines, Novak Djokovic, the world number one. And Australia, basically under lockdown for 2 years now, that whole population, generally speaking. And so they have strict rules on a federal level. But Novak got a Victorian exemption. So he traveled to Australia under that guise, with that visa, thinking he's going to play in the Australian Open. Then that was the federal government then said, sorry, buddy, we're canceling your visa. After which, on a scheduled appointment this past Monday, a judge turned that around and reinstated the visa. So Novak is thinking he's playing again. We get to the draw yesterday. They postponed the draw because it's still not 100% because a immigration minister can still overturn that. I think I got all that Australian mechanics correct. And so then they went ahead and they did the draw anyway. They postponed it about an hour and a half. They did the draw last night. And so Novak is the number one seed, but here's the deal, Drew. So if Novak gets kicked out of the country, for lack of a better term, before the first round match is scheduled, then they can rejigger the seeding. If he gets kicked out after they give a time for the first round match, which should be happening here in within, I don't know, 24, 48 hours, whatever it is, then a lucky loser from the qualies would step into his spot. And as you were saying before off air, not so lucky given the draw, but you get the idea. So we are still, as we do this, you know, you and I famously talked about this. I took Sasha Zverev bets in December at plus 650 because like you, and I guess I'm jumping on your topic sentence, but you think there's three people that can win this whole thing.
Yeah, this is a three-man. Yeah, I mean, in general, if you are new-ish to ATP major, you know, slam outright betting, it's pretty easy to winnow it down to a very narrow field. Basically the opposite of golf.
The opposite of the women's side.
Generally. The opposite of the women's side, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. But, you know, you got a slam in golf, you can reasonably talk yourself into eight players. You know, I'm gonna put a card together and we're gonna hit all eight of these guys. Somebody, one of these guys is gonna pop. It's usually much more straightforward on the men's side to narrow it down to who can realistically win. And it's because they play best of five in the slams. And while upsets are entirely common at this tournament, particularly in the early rounds, there's a reason for that. It's because a lot of the guys who have, you know, who have ranking points, who come in, you know, with high expectations by the market, they're not in great shape. They haven't played a ton of tennis this time of year, and they can get upset pretty, you know, their upsets are common because, you know, all you need is one guy to get hot from serve. It's a fast court. You could have unfavorable conditions on any given day because the heat is a factor here. So upsets in week one are common. Upsets in week two are rare. And it's because of the best of five, the format. And I mean, I enjoy it as a better because it makes betting, you know, it makes it much more straightforward. But as you look across this year's slate of players, there are three with any kind of reasonable chance of winning this title who have previously won a slam. One of those is Medvedev, who won his first slam a couple months ago.
Amazing.
Right?
His first.
Another one of those is Rafael Nadal, who has only ever won here once, and it was a million years ago, and is coming off of a major knee injury, which forced him to miss half of the season last year. The other guy is Novak Djokovic. And so it is, you know, if he ultimately gets popped and is not in the field, that makes this utterly wide open, you know, just in the minds of the players, because you will have somebody either winning their second ever slam, their second ever Australian Open, or, you know, or a debutante here. And, you know, I think your entire breakdown was correct. And I almost think if the immigration officials reject the visa, it's something like a 3-year ban from the country of Australia.
God, I didn't realize
like it's
that.
It's not trivial what happens here. And that obviously that impacts his quest for most slams all time, obviously, because this is his home court after Wimbledon, and Wimbledon is really only his his home court now because he dethroned Federer and because there's not a lot of other guys with grass quality and you know, on tour now.
But this is the slam he's won the most, right? Australian Open is the slam he's won the most.
I believe it is, yeah. And in general, if you just look at his match-by-match scores, this is where he's been the most dominant, right? So it's those two factors definitely play into it. So getting involved in the outright market, you either have to have some sort of conviction whether Djokovic is going to play or not. Or in your case, in the case of Zverev, I think you bought at the right time with the player who stood to gain the most.
Yes.
Because the way the seeding worked, Medvedev was always going to be two, Djokovic was always going to be one, and they were always going to be on opposite sides of the draw. So they were never going to meet until the final. That was set in stone, right? Mm-hmm. The Zverev was the wild card because he could have ended up on the top or the bottom because it's random.
Yep.
But that doesn't really help him because he was likely going to have to beat both guys if he wanted to win the title. And he ultimately he's the big winner here if Djokovic goes out, because then all of a sudden one half of the draw is his to lose and he only has to potentially deal with Medvedev in the final. And you can convince me pretty easily that that's going to be more or less a little bit of a, you know, pick a match juiced in favor of Medvedev likely.
What would you say to someone? It's like, that's great that you got him at plus 650, Gil, but what about now where he's like plus 350, knowing that the Djokovic thing is still in the balance? Would you make a plus 350 bet on Sasha Zverev to win it?
Again, kind of going back to the key philosophy, is he going to have to do it himself or are you rooting for chaos? I think you're rooting for chaos with him. A chaotic event, Djokovic gets bounced.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, that's the whole bet,
honestly,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's your whole bet.
Yeah.
Djokovic gets bounced. Zverev doesn't have to do it himself. Push comes to shove. If you remember very clearly, like one of the angles why you bet Medvedev in the U.S. Open last year was because of this exact scenario.
Yes.
You could see it on paper. There was going to be a hot, humid night. Zverev and Djokovic were going to have to go head-to-head. That was going to be a bloodbath. And then it was going to be a short turnaround for Djokovic or Zverev, whoever won, to face arrested Medvedev in the final. And so almost certainly the fatigue was in favor of Medvedev. Similar situation here. You're probably, you know, if both players get to the semifinals, then, you know, I still give Zverev a puncher's chance in that one. He's definitely not, he's not going to be the favorite in that match, certainly, but he'll have a shot. And then again, you're rooting for chaos where either Djokovic himself gets deported or, the whole chaotic nature disrupts his performance, which is something that I haven't heard many people talk about.
I agree with this completely.
But it's very possible. Djokovic is a creature of habit. He has a very specific routine, in instances in the past where it's been disrupted, he's performed poorly.
And he gets very angry when he's not the crowd favorite.
Oh, yo, I didn't even think about that, but yes, you're absolutely right. And he usually has the crowd here. And yes. I don't think that there's any likelihood he's going to have the crowd this year.
No, 100%. So go ahead. I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was going to ask.
I think that's the whole case. That's the bear case for Djokovic even beyond, you know, even if he plays this tournament, is he anywhere close to a normal year for him at the Australian Open? No way. So it's, you know, there are a lot of angles, I think. And actually, you know, anyone listening, I don't have an issue getting involved with Zverev right now. I think he got a pretty decent draw here. No one really scares me in that quarter, even Nadal. So he's likely your quarter two champ.
Yeah, if you can find quarter markets, absolutely bet accordingly.
Ooh, should look for those.
For sure. Yeah, no, for sure. So did you make any Medvedev future wagers at all? Did you make any?
That's the only thing I've got to this point. And it was a small stake because I was concerned about the likelihood of no Djokovic and then Zverev and Medvedev on the same half of the draw.
Right. I would have been
real chapped.
Yes,
that happens.
Me too. Thankfully that didn't.
But ultimately that's not what we're looking at here. And you know, I mean, we can go quarter by quarter if you want to talk about the way that this is set up here.
Yeah, let's do overall, quarter by quarter.
Overall, I was pretty pretty satisfied with the way that the draw broke for Medvedev.
So let's do just like 90 seconds on each quarter, and then I want to ask you one final question, which is, without knowing lines of the individual matches yet, obviously without knowing the first round matches, who are some of the players generally bubbling under that you think the market will probably underrate or perhaps overrate as well? But let's do it quarter by quarter, if you will. The floor is yours, sir.
Sure. So if you had asked me pre-draw, I would have told you, see where Yannick Sinner lands. He's an up-and-coming player. He's obviously a little bit of a sharp favorite, so you're not going to get an amazing price on him. But I was curious to see where he lands because he's got the youth. He can handle the best of five, and I'm not worried about his fitness coming off of a layoff, like I would with some of the older players. Another guy that absolutely popped at the ATP Cup was Felix Auger-Aliassime, however you want to pronounce that, yep. FAA. and I was looking hard at his futures, but he has one kryptonite, which is Medvedev is he cannot beat Medvedev, period. He's going to need someone else to take Medvedev out. And unfortunately for FAA, he landed in Medvedev's section or is his quarter. So they would face off in the fourth quarterfinals, and I would make Medvedev about -350 in that head to head. So there's not much value anymore in FAA, even though it is worth watching some of his matches, particularly round one. Did you see who they put him up against? Rusevori?
Oh my God.
In the fourth quarter. Yes. Oh man. Such a good round one match.
Are you,
they basically took him out of the tournament, which is too bad for him. But
I don't want to break in if you were doing this by quarter, if you were doing this in any order, but I was going to ask you the Isner Opelka Kyrgios heavy server, type of player on this surface. That's a real benefit to be a hard server because this is fast.
It typically is, but you got to get to the second week.
Yes,
is what I've noticed. You need rhythm with your serve for it to be as dangerous as it can be. Ultimately, I don't remember any of those guys really just ripping the cover off the ball right out of the gate in week one of these tournaments.
Yeah.
It takes about a week to get your serve's rhythm down. But if any of those guys get to week two, that's a matchup you do not want any part of.
No.
If in the fourth round, quarterfinals, semifinals, etc. So that, yeah, but those, Opelka, interestingly enough, market is cold on him right now. He was a dog yesterday to Brandon Nakashima.
I had Nakashima last night. I lost on that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure exactly why the market's so cold on Opelka, because he's got way, way, way more experience at this point at this level.
Yeah. He beat Medvedev last year, if I recall, late last year on hard courts. Opelka's brimming with confidence.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have him as our top U.S. player heading into this particular tournament for these conditions. And if he makes it to week two, he'll be fun watch.
How do you feel about Kokkinakis? Yeah. Kokkinakis and Rinderknecht and guys like that?
I'm excited to see them back in the mix.
Yeah.
Kokkinakis especially. He got the wild card here, so he didn't have to qualify. That's allowed him to play. Is he in Sydney or Adelaide? I believe he's in Adelaide. But he had a really nice win.
Beat Isner in three tiebreakers.
Against Isner with the three tiebreakers.
Yeah.
Was that two nights ago?
Two nights ago.
Backed it up with he covered the game spread, but not the set spread last night against Vukic.
Yeah, I backed him against Isner, and I faded him to my detriment against Vukic. Yeah.
I played both those overs, so I was delighted by the results in both cases.
Yeah,
he may win Adelaide. At that point, he's not going to do anything in the Australian Open in Melbourne, unfortunately.
He's a fun player. I have Kokkinakis tonight.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm anti-Cilic at this point in his career, so I support you there. He could win Adelaide. There will be one or two players who you have not heard much about before, even if you are a relatively serious tennis fan, that will do something at this tournament. There always are. I'll never forget the Kazakhstani kid who beat Djokovic with the glasses, Dennis Eastman. He took this tournament by storm.
What about Karatsev last year?
I was just going there next. Yeah, Karatsev.
We've seen tennis tonight also. By the way.
Thursday. Oh, okay, nice.
I have Karatsev and Kokkinen today.
Conditions favor Karatsev here for sure. He's a dangerous player to keep your eye on. But yeah, we've had runs from guys like Tennis Sandgren. Chung made a run here. You know, like there will be a couple of names in week two of this who you are like, wow, holy smokes, how is this guy here? If you want to kind of go quarter by quarter,
please, real quick, we'll wrap it up with that. Yep.
Berrettini's out of form. I don't like him at his current price in the first quarter. Realistically, if Djokovic gets eliminated for immigration reasons, I would circle Pablo Carreño Busta in the first quarter. Second quarter is Zverev's to lose. There's no one else in that run outside of maybe Karatsev, who I think gives him much of a match in the fourth round or the quarterfinals. Third quarter is the one where I think you want to try to take on a price. You have an out-of-form Tsitsipas. Tsitsipas dealt with an injury late last season, has not really shown much quality so far in coming back into this calendar year. Casper Ruud is your other top seed in the third quarter, and he is not peak form for this setting at all. He is a clay quarter through and through, and you would only look to back him at the likes of a French Open or a US Open, and even then not to win but to get out of his quarter, which leaves you with the likes of Yannick Sinner and Roberto Bautista Agut. I think those two players meet and one of them takes the third quarter. And both are available probably for a pretty decent price. I'm going to look it up right now. But if those two players met in the quarterfinal, I would favor Roberto Bautista Agut. And I think you can probably get him in the price point range of about 8-1 to win the third quarter. So that's a fun look.
So it was Bautista Agut. Who was the other one in that quarter that you said? I'm sorry.
Yannick Sinner.
Oh, there you go.
The young Italian player. I think Sinner comes out of section 5. I think Bautista Agut comes out of section 6, and I have a slight lean to RBA in that final. And really, it's only because he's a machine. Like, that guy's a robot. He absorbs the conditions without issue. He can handle the heat. He can go 5 setters, and you're not worried about backing him the next time out. So that's really the only kind of fun, long shot-ish look that I would try to target. And then, as mentioned, the fourth quarter, absolutely Medvedev's to lose. There's no one else in there that matches up with his game whatsoever. And believe it or not, if this was a completely neutral tournament and there were, if there was, you take the immigration stuff for Djokovic out of the picture, I have Medvedev more likely to win this tournament.
Even if Joker plays. Yeah.
Even if he plays, and even if it's just there's no crowds, there's no no booing, no disruption of it, he's not getting extra testing, he's not being disrupted, no one's giving him side eye in the gym, all that, throw all that out the window. This is just a neutral tournament. I have Medvedev as more likely to win. I have him as a higher rated player right now on hard court.
Yeah, the data supports it. The data supports it. Generally speaking, side eye in the locker room. You got to always worry about that. I love that part. Side eye in the locker room. Drew,
that's a huge part of your
I apologize for the interruptions. I just get so excited talking about tennis that I'm just like brimming with questions to ask. So forgive me for not letting you complete some of your thoughts there. I'm glad we got to all of it.
I'm in the same way. I'm on a roll. I can't get enough of this stuff.
Well, let's have you on a numbers game during the tournament, obviously, as we always do. Maybe even an extra appearance or two. We'll see what we do with the Australian Open, but I'm very pumped to do this. Thank you for doing your half here. Dan Weston will join us momentarily to give us his take on things. Thank you, sir, for doing triple duty this week, man.
Hey, best of luck to you and yours, and happy new year to everybody. Happy tennis new year, and enjoy the first slam.
Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper on Twitter. Again, Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcast, wherever podcasts are available.
Gil Alexander, so excited to have this gentleman back on the show. It's been too long. At Tennis Ratings is where you can find him on Twitter. Still does his stuff for Betfair. It's Dan Weston, everybody. How you doing, Dano?
I am good, Gil. How are you?
Doing very well. Great to see you, man. And of course, it is tennis's first major. And I mean, where do we start? We have to start with only one place. The latest, in case people missed it, on Novak Djokovic is he was allowed into the country by Victorian law. He then had his visa taken away. It was then reinstated. And now it has been taken away again. And so it looks like there's an appeal that could happen or that will happen. But it looks like at this point, a little more than 48 hours away from the Australian Open, that Novak will not be playing. That's the current thing. And so, Dan, I come to you and I say, how has that then informed your bets?
Well, it's such an interesting scenario, and there's still a lot of intangibles. I feel like this story's got a lot more to run, if you like. He was 2.92 on Betfair on Wednesday, but before the draw. Now he's drifted out to around the 3.4 mark. So the market's pretty defensive on Djokovic. And in my pre-draw preview for Betfair, I wrote that I'd be pretty nervous if I held a big position on him, and that's certainly the case. Now, it might be worth sort of clarifying with your listeners is that check the rules. If you're going to bet on this tournament, check the rules.
Yes.
Because on Betfair, for example, if you bet Djokovic before the tournament and he doesn't play the first round game, you get a void, you get a refund. But if if say for the sake of argument, his legal channels give him a kind of a stay to some degree, and he plays round one, and then he gets thrown out of the country after round one, then you lose all your money. So as soon as he hits that first ball on court, everything's live, no voids. And that might be different for various different sports books. So if you're going to bet on Djokovic, check the odds. Now, personally, I wouldn't touch Djokovic. For various reasons. First of all, I thought he was very short priced, regardless of any off court issues. I have Daniel Medvedev as slightly higher numbers than Djokovic on hard court over the last 12 months, anyway. And I was quite surprised to see Djokovic favourite with all those off foot issues. Now, obviously, we know now that this is just even worse pre tournament preparation for Djokovic. Mm. So the fact that he is only very slightly bigger than Medvedev in the outright market is interesting, and it's also worth noting that prior to the draw and prior to the latest issues for Djokovic, the top three in the market had 83% implied chance of winning the tournament. That's fallen now to 72% because we haven't seen a lot of shortening on Medvedev and Zverev, even with those issues for Djokovic. We've seen the likes of Nadal, Tsitsipas, and a couple of the guys just around the 100-1 mark or slightly shorter. They're the ones who seem to be benefiting from the uncertainty around Djokovic rather than the market leaders.
Yes, it is super top heavy. And if Djokovic is out, it could very well come down to a mano-a-mano versus Medvedev and Zverev. Others will have a say, but those really are the three guys with Djokovic that have a shot. Did you bet anything for those who have a quarter-by-quarter market on the men's side? Dan, did you recommend anything there?
I'm still playing through a lot of it. Obviously, there's a lot to consider with the draw and working out the implications of the draw. It's also worth noting that I think Andre Rublev would then go into Djokovic's slot at the top of the draw if Djokovic is unable to play. So there's all sorts of ifs, buts, and maybes at the moment. So there's not a lot of certainty.
So they would move the 5 seed up to the 1 seed.
That's what I'm reading, yeah.
Interesting, because there were some conflicting reports on that. At one point, they were saying the lucky loser would just move in, you know, so that's interesting.
So a lucky loser would definitely take the place of Djokovic in the tournament, but I think in a different slot.
But they would shift.
From what I've read.
Yeah.
From what I've read anyway.
It's an unprecedented situation. We absolutely are learning on the fly here. And last thing about the men's side, is there a player, we don't know, we're just getting the first round match lines now. And I don't know if you've even looked at those matches because they just really have been posted here recently. Do you have any first round match plays? Or if you don't, broadly speaking, is there a name or names bubbling under that you, if not win the tournament or win their quarter, could see making some noise in this tournament that people should be aware of?
Yeah, I think the few of the guys with strong serves around the top 10 and top 15 in the market and in the rankings are quite capable of making decent runs, particularly when we think the conditions are going to be fairly quick for a hard court. The likes of Hubert Hurkacz and Matteo Berrettini are two with very strong serve numbers. And in quicker conditions, they're not going to be that easy to break. So there might be there are a couple of players to keep an eye on in the next tier of players, if you like. But there's not, as we always say with the men's, it's not a lot that really stands out when the market's so top heavy to start with.
Yeah. And what about the women's side? You and I have done these for years, and we've always said, well, you know, yeah. The men's very top heavy. The women's, yeah, anybody can win it. Anybody probably can win it on the ladies' side, but Ash Barty has really distinguished herself of late. So do you look at that side and say it really is her tournament to lose at this point?
Yeah, so I have her for a reasonable distance ahead of the field on my numbers. So the fact that she's at the top of the market and fairly clear of Naomi Osaka as second favorite seems pretty reasonable. Now, obviously, we know that they're now scheduled to face each other in round four, mm-hmm. which is an incredible clash early in the tournament. So it's probably unsurprising that Osaka's drifted about 3 points on Betfair from 7 to not far off 10s now based on that draw. So the market's looking to fade Osaka. She's friendless in the market after that draw. And she's also got Amanda Anisimova in round three, who is one of the players who I was keen to keep an eye on for the draw as well. And so it's a pretty tricky round three, round four subsequently for Osaka in this tournament, and it's not surprising that she's drifted at all.
If I said to you, Dan, and we're talking to Dan Weston at Tennis Ratings on Twitter, global analytics expert on the sport of tennis and other sports, you betting cricket these days too, Dan? Is that what you're doing?
I'm not allowed to bet on cricket. I work with teams.
Not allowed. Not allowed to bet on cricket. I said to you, okay, you must make one bet in the futures market on the ladies' side, but it's not Ash Barty. It's somebody else that's double digits here by American betting parlance. Who would it be?
It would be your friend and mine, Igor Swiatek.
Yes.
16s. So my numbers rate her as the third best hard quarter on tour right now. And obviously we know that she's young. She's got a lot of future upside as well. Young players tend to start the season off and pretty well. We've already seen a few surprise finalists on the men's tour in these warm-up events. So I'm very comfortable with Swiatek's price. And the fact that she's got a pretty straightforward opener, Harriet Dart from England in round one. Kasatkina might be a bit of a test in round three, but you've got to be beating the likes of Kasatkina in round three to win a slam or to get to the business end at least. And I think that she looks a very clear favourite to me in that fourth bracket against the likes of Sabalenka, Kerber and Leila Fernandez as well. So I don't see a lot to trouble her, to be honest with you.
Yeah, she got the opposite side of the bracket that Barty did, right? So they could meet in a final if it came to that. Yep. I'm with you, too. I know people, when I first said it last week, that Iga's probably the one long shot bet, and I did put it in my pocket last week before the draw even. She's got the numbers. She has the ability. Now, can she get over the Barty hump when facing her head-to-head? You know, who knows in the end. But in terms of the value, I would agree with that wholeheartedly, that Iga Swiatek at 16-1 we're showing at BetMGM would be the long shot play on the lady side. I took Zverev at plus 650, Dan, in December, anticipating that Djokovic would be out. So this next 48 hours is actually as big a deal to me as the matches themselves, man.
Yeah, sure. And you got the value regardless, right?
Regardless, I got the value. You don't have any plays in the finals here before the Australian Open in Adelaide or Sydney before we go?
No. Just gonna keep an eye on everything overnight here in the UK before some interesting matches with Kretchikova and Badosa, two players who could easily do well in this tournament as well.
Yes,
being in the final.
I agree. Some marginal value on Krejcikova, I think. Dan, we got to run. Great to see you, man.
Thanks, Gil. Take care. Speak soon.
You too. Dan Weston, everybody, at Tennis Ratings.